Blog Talk Radio.
This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. One of the most anticipated movies of this summer. No, not Harry Potter. And no, not Fantastic Four and the Rise of the Silver Surfer. Is the Simpsons movie. And while Matt Groening couldn't make it to join us today, we're lucky enough to welcome a member of the extended Simpsons creative family, frequent Simpsons comic book writer Chuck Dixon. Dixon is a prolific comics writer, easily shifting between the in-jokes and low humor of Bart and Homer for Bongo Comics to the high drama of DC's Caped Crusader, Batman. Chuck, welcome to Mr. Media.
Oh, thank you.
Please complete this sentence, Chuck. I'm Bart Simpson.
And you're not.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. Now that we've confirmed the identity of today's guest, Chuck, I'm guessing that writing for the Simpsons comic is either your toughest gig or the most fun, that there's probably no in-between.
Actually, there is. I mean, it is. It's well, like any writing, it's fun when it's going well, and living hell when it's not. But it is a hard gig because there's a lot of demands and a lot of expectations. You expect a level of humor from The Simpsons that you don't expect from any other property. So you know, you got to get those laugh out loud moments in every story, which that's tough.
Do you have to do anything to psych yourself up or to get in the mood to write a Simpsons script that maybe you don't have to for Grifter or Batman or Nightmare on Elm Street?
I have to cogitate more on it. It sort of has to percolate. And once I've got two or three scenes in my head, then I go to work and then write them and then work to tie them together into the plot. But it's a much slower process for The Simpsons. It takes two or three times longer to write a Simpsons script than it would be to write anything else. And, you know, there's that pressure. I probably put more pressure on myself than I need to, but I like to be the guy who hands in the problem-free script. So I don't send it out, the Simpsons script out, until it's to my mind, perfect.
Have any of the stories that you've written come from your own life and your own family?
Well, yeah. Recently I wrote one, Marge Simpson, Forensic Homemaker, in which she comes home from grocery shopping to find the kitchen an unholy mess, even messier than usual. And her suspects are Maggie, Bart, and Homer. And she uses forensics to figure out who made the mess. And she traces it back. She figures it all started with somebody trying to make a smoothie in the blender. And it's very much from my own life. My wife found, I thought I had cleaned up a mess, and she traced it back to the blender and even knew the ingredients. That astounded me.
Wow.
I thought, well, this is a Marge Simpson story.
Your wife deserves a comic book for she figured that out.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Do you, how did you get the job?
Well, they do their annual Treehouse of Horror comic, and it's invitation only. You know, it's like Augusta. I wanted to do it, but you don't go and say, hey, I want to be in the Treehouse of Horror comics. So I sort of waited until I was invited. And once I had my foot in the door, a couple of months later, I came up with another Simpsons idea. For a full issue, and you know, I said, you know, would you be open to this? And they bought it, and slowly over time, I do a couple a year. But recently, I've stepped up. I'm doing quite a few stories for them for the various comics.
Who's harder to put words in their mouth, Bart, Homer, Maggie?
Well, Maggie's easy, but Homer can be tough. But the toughest one is Ralph Wiggum, because
really? He's
so much of the Simpsons humor comes from surprise at what they say, because it's always a reversal. It's always something you'd never think they were going to say, and Ralph is the king of that. I mean, he says things that no one's ever said and no one will ever say again, and only he can say. The Simpsons is great because every character has a voice, and it's not like Friends or some other sitcom where the lines are interchangeable and anyone can read them. You know, everything is specific, and Ralph is the most specific of them all. Mm. Lenny and Carl jokes are tough to come up with too, because they've raised the bar so high on the show.
What about Comic Book Guy? And
Comic Book Guy's easy. I've taken to have him come in that when the characters are saying, well, that never happened, or I don't remember that, I'll have Comic Book Guy simply show up in the background and remind people of continuity.
It's kind of the Greek chorus.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he's easy to write because anybody who's interested in comics has met that guy a million times, or is that guy.
Now, you don't write these comics in a vacuum. There's a lot of people back on the West Coast that look over everything you do. Do you get comments back from them?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, some stories are tougher than others. Some stories sail through with no problem, you know, maybe a little change here or whatever. And they always let me make the changes, which is nice. And they'll have suggestions. They'll call and they'll have a problem and they'll have a possible solution to it, which is great, instead of just, you're the writer, you figure it out. But, yeah, I deal with Terry Delagene and I deal with Bill Morrison, who are directly involved in the offices. And then, from my understanding, Matt Groening oversees everything. So I'm dealing with the core people, and I've been dealing with the same people from the beginning, which is great. Because when you write licensed properties in comics, generally you're dealing with some entry-level guy who's only had the job a few weeks because he's going to move up to be producer or something. And those guys are always trying to prove real hard that they're doing their job, so they ask for a million rewrites. But the Simpsons, the Bongo guys, they're terrific. They're helpful.
Can you give us an example of notes you've gotten about scripts?
Mostly just make it funnier, or this could be funnier, or the ending could be snappier. The worst one is when they don't get a joke. I did a joke in a comic. I had Homer arrested by the police, and they put him in the back of the squad car. And he's shouting, I'm innocent, I didn't do it. And the cop says, that's what everybody says. And Homer says, I bless the rains down in Africa. Does everyone say that? And you see, you got it. They didn't get it. And this was one, I know when to walk away from a joke that's not working, because it's like, okay, only I thought it was funny. And if you have to explain a joke, it's dead. But this one I fought for. And it went all the way up the chain, and no one there got it.
Really?
But everyone I've ever told it to thought it was funny.
Nobody gets the Toto reference.
Well, they got the reference. They just didn't see why it was funny. Isn't that something no one would ever say?
Oh, my God.
But I've learned since then, if they don't get it, to walk away. I got a Rock and Roll Heaven joke in a script I haven't handed in yet that I'm terrified they won't get. But we'll see.
How different is it to write for The Simpsons than for superheroes? I mean, Batman, not the funniest guy on earth.
Well, drama's just easier because pathos is easier to go for. And the hardest thing about Batman is suspense. Basically, once you've got that down, you know, once you've seen two Hitchcock movies, if you didn't get it by then, you're never going to get it.
I think you're supposed to make it seem harder, Chuck. I don't think you want to make it seem that easy for people to do.
Well, maybe it isn't. I don't know. I look at things and I go, why didn't they get this? This isn't hard. You know, how do you make a lousy Shadow movie? how do you make a lousy Tarzan movie? How do you screw that up? So, you got the suspense elements. You can dazzle them with clever dialogue exchanges and meanness. Cruelty is a big thing in comics now. It's like Quentin Tarantino. You know, it's like, what's the plot of a Quentin Tarantino? Well, there really isn't one. But all that dialogue is kind of cool and. The characters look great.
Kind of like Ocean's 13.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I saw Ocean's 12, and I can't figure that one out. well, what I can't figure out is why they made another one. but, yeah, I mean, it's just easier. But writing funny stuff is harder. An Archie writer recently told me that someone suggests heroes because it's half the work, because they don't have to be funny. So you can come up with a plot, and that's it. Just plot.
Is it painful when you get a script back and someone says it's not funny or it's not funny enough?
I really have a thick skin on that stuff. Yeah. It's like, you throw it against the wall, it works or it doesn't work. If it didn't make you laugh, then I'm glad you pointed it out. I'd rather fail here in the script stage than somebody read the comic and go, shit, that wasn't funny, or he didn't get it. So you kind of need, if they're not getting the jokes or it's not funny to them, and obviously it's not going to be funny to the reader, that my timing didn't work or the reference didn't work.
Now, I know you haven't seen the Simpsons movie yet, as we sit and have this conversation, but you're looking forward to it, I guess, and you've got, I guess there's multiple reasons why you'd like it to be a big hit.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's been a long time coming, and, lots of reasons why it wasn't made before. I'd like it well. He's a huge shot in the arm. But if this thing performs the way I think it's going to perform, it's going to reinvigorate the franchise all over again. And also for its worldwide audience. Simpsons has an enormous worldwide audience. The Simpsons comics are the number one best-selling comics in most European countries, in Germany and in Holland. I think they like the perverse view of America. But it's a lot of the reason why we keep the comic franchise going is for foreign audiences. But yeah, the movie's going to help all of that.
Do you benefit if the comic sells more copies?
No, they pay very well up front. It's a work for hire situation. They pay better than any other comic gig, which I probably shouldn't say that. I'll have my job taken away by some Englishman. They pay well up front, and they pay quickly, which is really important to a comic
freelancer. Very important to a freelancer.
Very important. Right.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's not how much you make, it's how often you make it.
Yeah. How did you get started in comics?
I just can't do anything else well, and I've always wanted to do comics. And like most comic book writers, I thought I was going to be an artist, but I simply don't have the discipline to be an artist. So I became a writer, which doesn't take any discipline at all. And when I realized I couldn't do the art as well as writing, I just, kept hammering away at the companies. And I started going up for interviews in the 70s, which was the worst time. It was like the Great Depression for comics. It was horrible. Sales were awful. They were laying people off left and right. So I didn't really get to writing full time until I was 30. The rest of the time, I did children's books for a while. Hated that. I drove an ice cream truck. I worked at a 7-Eleven. I did every donkey job imaginable because I simply wasn't good at anything else. And there was really no point in pursuing a doctorate.
It's nice to meet someone else who has that attitude. I mean, I've been writing since I was 13 or 14, and people say, why? I said, I can't seem to be able to do anything else.
I can't have
I'm not even sure I do this well.
You wonder, that's the paranoia. Am I a big fraud and I don't have any talent at all? But I can't hammer a nail into a board straight, so I better do something.
Okay, I can do that for the record. I just want it on the record. I can hammer a nail, so.
Well, I used to roof for a living, and I still can't hammer a nail.
Did you ever do, you said you worked on some children's books, but your focus was always that you wanted to write comics?
Always comics, never right. anything else. I'm not one of these guys who's in comics until my novel gets sold or until I sell a screenplay. I honestly don't care about any of that. If you ever see me writing a novel or writing a screenplay, it's because I couldn't get comic work. And I've done some prose work recently, and I've written some movie treatments simply, to expand my horizons, because I like to think a year, 2 years down the road. But if I wrote comics till the very day I died, and that's all I ever wrote, I'd be the happiest guy on earth. I really like it.
Matt, your son Colin is here. Would you encourage him to follow you? Does he have any interest in writing?
Yeah, I think he has interest in storytelling and in writing. So it's hard not to when you live with a person who writes all the time. And writing looks easy. Because, until you're inside the person's head, the lonely torment every day, this long-distance marathon of trying to get a story together. But, I think, he can't help but by osmosis be interested in it.
I actually had someone just yesterday say to me, how do you get motivated every day and get up and write? And my answer to them was, I pointed to my daughter and I said, because she's got to eat. Do you have a different kind of motivation?
Well, no. I want to take care of my family. I mean, it's like anybody else that goes to a job. But the mechanics of actually how to get started, that's always been tough. I mean, if you write, you know it's tough. Like, what are my first words? And there's all these, in the writing magazines, all these bozo writing exercises, none of which work. You know, just write down gibberish. You know, that's great. But the best advice I ever got was, I read an interview with a screenwriter from the 40s, and he said that never write down your last idea of the day, so that the next day you know where you're going to start. And it sounds corny, but it really works. Hmm. It's like, well, I have an idea for one more page. I know what happens, but I won't write it. I'm going to quit for the day. Then tomorrow morning, I know what my first page is. And once you get that done, it's clear sailing. It's easy. Well, not easy, but easier.
Let's talk about some of the other comic series that you've worked on. Nightmare on Elm Street, for example. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
I really enjoyed the time on that. They when Wildstorm got the New Line license, they offered me my choice of Freddy or Jason or Texas Chainsaw, and I went for Freddy immediately, because there's something more cerebral about a guy who chases you in your nightmares. Plus, the suspense is all built in. I love the tension that you never know if the characters are awake or asleep. You know, are they in the real world and safe, or are they asleep and in Freddy's dimension? And you know, I build a lot upon that stuff. And plus, the Nightmare on Elm Street is, they aren't necessarily Old Testament morality plays like the other ones are. In Nightmare on Elm Street, everyone's up for grabs. You know, it doesn't have to be the cheerleader who's having premarital sex. It can be anybody. So there's less of
a... How did you know I was thinking of her?
there's less built-in predictability to Nightmare. Plus, Freddy's a great character. He's obviously smarter than Jason or whatever that insane family is in the Texas stories.
Now, I understand you're working on a new Grifter Midnighter series for DC's sister company, Wildstorm. And for those who have never, frankly, who've never heard of the characters or the publisher, no disrespect to either, but, you know, fact's a fact. Here's an opportunity to pitch the series. What would you tell people about it to recommend it to new readers?
Well, it's a real postmodern comic in which you've got these guys that, you know, they probably have to stand on a chair to be, or, and get a dispensation from the Pope to be anti-heroes. I mean, they're just not nice guys. The only thing that makes them the protagonist in the story is that the bad guys are just so damn bad. Midnighter is a popular character. He's a member of a group called The Authority, which is a, you know, big Eisner Award-winning series from Wildstorm. Grifter is a original member of Wildcats, a series created by Jim Lee. And I've written Grifter before. I did a number of Team 7 books for Wildstorm years ago in which Grifter appeared. And basically this is just the two of them getting together against an alien menace. And it's a really weird alien menace. I mean, I came up with something really, really strange. So it's got gorgeous artwork by Ryan Benjamin. And it's postmodern, nihilistic superhero action, the way that the fans apparently like it now. Hmm. So, as Abe Lincoln said, if you like this sort of thing, then this is the sort of thing you'll like.
Is that what he said?
Yes, he did.
He did. Let's say I grant you the power to be able to make the phone ring, and any editor you want, with offering any character, an assignment doing any character you'd like, what would be the character?
It's an even split between two. I would love to do a long run on the Fantastic Four, and I would love an opportunity to write the Lone Ranger.
Wow.
And those are the two, and they're really, I mean, after Batman, you know, that's pretty much, I mean, I never thought I'd write Batman. I never thought I'd write it. And when I got the invitation to come in and join the Bat team, I was like, this can't be real. There has to be a joke here somewhere. So, you know, once you've written Batman, everything else sort of pales in comparison. But those are the two that I'd really like a shot at.
What would you do the Fantastic Four that hasn't been done before?
Well, that's the thing. I wouldn't do anything that hasn't been done before. I just do, you know, I just fall back on what makes those characters great and what makes it a classic character, and just come up with new threats for them, because that's what Stan and Jack did every month, come up with a threat that made you as a reader believe this has to be the last issue because they can't get out of this. And I love that aspect of it. And the characters, I had a couple of brief opportunities to write them, and it's the happiest I'd ever been writing comics, because they simply write themselves. Their relationships are all laid out in Classic, and you can still write surprises within the framework, but they just work so beautifully together.
So are you excited or anxious about the Fantastic Four Silver Surfer movie?
No, I think it's a step in the right direction. The first movie, I would have liked a lot better if they had treated the Doom origin closer to the comic, because Doom is like, he's the be-all, end-all of villains for me. You know, he's a villain that you can't help but like in a lot of ways, you know, which that's a great villain when you're conflicted. And he's like the Tony Soprano of comics. You know, he means well. So I'm glad to see with Silver Surfer that they're going to be hewing closer to what the comics are about. I'm just anxious to see, is Galactus going to be in it? You know, or is it just, you know, they're going to dodge around that one?
It would seem like there have to be some. I mean, why else would the Silver Surfer be coming to Earth, right?
Yeah, you'd think that, but then, you know, how many times would we go into a comic movie and think, oh, well, this has that. Well, how'd they miss that one?
You mean like, oh, the Hulk?
Yeah. It's like, how do you... I mean, if you want a sublime comic book experience, the Hulk number one by Stan and Jack, you can't beat it. It's got everything but the kitchen sink in it, and it all works. And I would defy anybody to find a comic with more in it told better. And they make a movie of it and throw it all out the window for some strange Freudian blather.
Chuck, one of the major issues in your industry is over the future of the so-called pamphlet, the traditional 32-page comic book. Versus the explosion of bigger, more expensive graphic novels and comic collections. What do you think the future holds for comic book publishing?
Well, I think for one thing, the major companies, meaning DC and Marvel, and they're starting to do this, they have to look at something beyond superheroes. Because if you see the lists of top-selling trades and graphic novels, there ain't a superhero on there. I mean, Asterix is on there. But there's no superheroes. And it's because superheroes, to the casual reading public, form a very small subgenre of like science fiction. You know, they're not as admired. They're not wizard hot in the real world of casual readers and library goers. And library sales are becoming more and more important to comics. Comics are going to have to make some kind of a sea change. And I don't think going directly to trade is it, because that's a lot of money up front. And the comics industry's always used to getting their money in 30 days. And you go to the book trade, you got to wait 90 days. And that's a big consideration for comics. And they'll have to do more marketing and things like that. I prefer if they use the model in Japan of doing the big telephone book anthologies. I think that would be a better way to go. Because there's a lot of value there. There's no value in a $2.99, 22-page comic book. There just isn't. I don't know why anybody buys them. I know I write them, and I pray to God that they sell, but I don't understand why anybody would buy one. There's no value there.
I think back to, you know, 30 years ago and going, you know, going to the Krausers when the Krausers convenience store when the new comics would come in, and you know, walking out with a stack that was about 3 inches thick, and they were 15 cents or 12 cents each. But now I like to take my daughter to the comic book store. You know, one or two comics, $3 to $5 each. That's about all we're gonna get. And she reads them like eating candy.
And they run way ahead of inflation. I mean, nothing's gone up in price the way maybe movie admissions. But I remember the month they went from a dime to 12 cents. Mm-hmm. I was a kid. For a quarter, you got two comics and a Mounds bar. Well. You know, that all changed, and I was stunned then. I can't imagine kids now. I mean, and you look at a manga book, 170 pages for under $10. That's a deal. Mm-hmm. You look at Shonen Jump. Was it like $5-6 for, you know, over 300 pages? Well, yeah, I want that. I don't want this little tiny stack of real estate brochures. So,
as we're talking, the major comic book event of the year, Comic Con International in San Diego, is still a few weeks away. What's the appeal of that convention? Why do you go, and you know, what do you get out of it?
Well, mostly I go to conventions to meet up with guys that I work with that I don't get to see face-to-face. So, and the irony is that I don't get much face-to-face time with them because the conventions are so big. I mean, I must have done 10 conventions in a row in which Billy Tucci and I said, yeah, I'll talk to you later, and we'd never talked. So that's the big attraction for me. Meeting the fans, that's a lot of fun, although it's very tiring. But, you know, you have some great conversations with fans, and it's nice to see the public, and it's nice to see the medium, you know, in sort of a almost carnival or state fair atmosphere. And, you know, and the enormity of it. I mean, it really is the one for the United States. I'd love to make a European con because they're even bigger.
Why do you suppose this one has gotten so big and its reputation has grown? I mean, this is an event now that's covered. The daily newspapers, the entertainment press, they all cover this now. Whereas no other comic book show gets this kind of attention.
Well, the proximity to Hollywood and L.A. is a huge factor. San Diego as a vacation destination point cannot be, you know, discounted because it is an amazing place to visit. The weather is fantastic. I mean, here we are in Tampa, and I'm still jealous of San Diego's weather. It's just crazy. It's like our weather in January all year long. It's like amazing. And I mean, you notice it when you get off the plane. I mean, I can't say enough about their weather. I mean, this is no hyperbole. You get off that plane, and you're like, oh, God, I've died and going to heaven. And I think those are the two big factors, plus they promote it. The city is very friendly to the comic book convention. They always have been. I mean, they've promoted the convention just as they would any other huge event in their city, and they've helped build it. Mm. You know, it's a great convention center. It's right there, down there by the water, right across from Coronado Island. It's gorgeous. Mm. So there's really no downside, except it's gotten so big.
I have not been there yet. I keep thinking next year I'm going to make it. I'm still hoping that that's going to happen soon. It sounds like a great...
It's amazing. It's the only convention I've ever been to that has a horizon line.
Well, Chuck, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media this week.
That was a lot of fun. Great interview. Thank you.
Appreciate your time. If you'd like to know more about the work of Chuck Dixon, check out his website at www.dixon, that's D-I-X-O-N, verse, V-E-R-S-E, .net. That's .net, not .com.
Nah, I'm not over there with Amazon.
And if you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media's Friday interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the audio feed in the podcast section of iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Please come back next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.